Please digress. This is great.
In the, we go back to the Roosevelt Junior High School Roundup, the annual, the write-up tells about the prognosticating the future, about because these are the days of Amos and Andy, mm-hmm. and we got Amos Root and Andy Olson or something with wheeling baby buggies or something. I don't see Delbert.
Yeah, I couldn't find it in there. Maybe one of the earlier ones it's in.
This is what the Delta, we put out an annual.
Oh, look at that. Huh.
I'm assistant editor. Yeah. Okay. Aiden Traganza, he lived in an apartment across the street from us on College Avenue in Berkeley. He was into archaeology and anthropology. Went and taught at San Francisco State until his death about 5 years ago.
How often did this
reorganize?
Well,
it was an annual thing. I've got a number of copies of it. Here's his trip to Yosemite by Frank Onos, June 20th, 1937, 3:25 a.m. Sunday morning found Trig, that would be that Traganza who went to San Francisco State and taught. Andy and myself started a trip to Yosemite National Park. Mm-hmm. We went up there and climbed Half Dome. One of our Delver members had happened to be in San Quentin at the time. We went and visited him. He said, and after quite a long chat with Fred, we again crossed the Golden Gate Bridge and headed south for home.
Happened to be in San Quentin?
Yeah, he came to protection of his sister. The fellow was coming in to the house with no good in mind, and they shot him.
Oh, no. Oh, boy. And he ended up in San Quentin for that?
Yeah.
Do you have more Delbert. Of these?
Well, I have a number of them, but I, if, see, I'm trying to encourage the geology department to set up the library of these things. I think they should have
them. We probably have Delvers. I think we do have Delvers quarterly, but I'm not so sure how many we've got.
I have more. That's one example, anyhow.
Oh, yeah. We do have this. As a matter of fact, you gave me a copy of this. I recognize that cartoon.
Okay. Well, maybe I have that. I don't know.
You may have had multiples, but not with that cover on it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
What about some of the special activities that you did? Say, Delvers. What did you remember some of the field trips you took? Some of the activities
on
campus?
Well, we went up to see Trona, Searles Dry Lake up in the Mojave. Was a rather extensive trip. One of the more interesting local ones got onto through, I lined it up to an uncle of mine who was working at Banning. He arranged for us to go through and into the tunnel that was being dug for the Metropolitan Water District. What do they call it? Bringing water from the Colorado River aqueduct.
Uh-huh.
Bring the river that water sort of under Mount San Jacinto, and we went down there with. They fixed us up with all those rain gear and hip boots, and took us right up to the head where they were doing the drilling and blasting and whatnot. We were probably half a mile underground.
Wow.
So that was quite exciting.
Yeah, I bet it was.
And then we had many local desert trips, often associated with the with classes. And also in Delvers, we mapped the prepared a geologic map of Palomar State Park.
Hmm.
Back when the observatory was being assembled. One time we filled a big round cylinders that are part of the support things of the scope we actually walked through those, just like big diameter pipes that are now, of course, part of the big mount of the telescope. Before they were, well, they're still on the ground, and before anything had done to them, was done to them.
Wow.
You know, that was Palomar.
That was something. I understand from, it doesn't matter, but anyway, I've heard that the field trips the students took back then, the faculty advisors, the faculty members didn't have to worry so much about insurance for the students and getting release forms and all that stuff.
Never came up. Nothing that I know of.
So I would imagine.
And even after that, well, of course, I don't really want to get into the post-war years and the teaching. Gosh, we ran field trips and I never worried about that.
Never had to concern themselves.
Of course, immediate post-war years, those were the best years ever. The fellows that had, you know, we'd lost years of due to the war and coming back to school and are out to make every minute count. And they were mature and just no problem. My wife and I go to the dances, presumably as chaperones, but heck, we were just having fun with the students.
Mm-hmm. Well, you, after all, were in the military as well. You were in the Army Air Corps.
Sure.
So when you got back, you started work here immediately. So you were much older than the students that were here. You were probably the same age, huh?
With a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Of course, I had gone on and had 3 years of graduate work after San Diego State. I had the 1 year at Berkeley and then 2 years at the University of Idaho. So, and then it was after that that I went into the service.
And then you went into the service and then you came to state and then you got your doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your doctorate years. I mean, you between 50 and 55, you were taking courses at the Oregon State University.
That's a good question. What I did, I got a leave of absence in the year 1950 to 51, and went to Oregon State, Corvallis. We got a 25-foot house trailer, and with our little son, approaching, well, 3/4 of a year old anyhow, went up there. And
you lived in Smith's trailer court,
right? Which was adequate, walking distance from campus. And well, wife and I were both veterans, so she took classes, and we were supported then by the GI Bill of Rights. Their GI Bill, mm-hmm. and plus she was a registered nurse, so she worked nights at the hospital in Corvallis, so we were able to make ends meet. And so I did 3/4 on the campus, and then we went for the summer down at the Oregon Institute of Marine Biology at Charleston, and took all the coursework that I could there. Much of it was sort of teaching myself. I had a whole lab to myself I took the marine course in marine algae. I was the only student, but I had to go out and do all the collecting and identify the plants. And then Dr. Finney from the campus came down at the end of the summer and queried me, and I turned the collection that I'd made over to him for his use on the campus.
Really worked independently.
So
that
I
must
worked,
have been a lot
took
of fun.
All of the coursework that I could in that 1 year of when I was away from here, and then following that, it was a matter of going back each quarter, and registering, taking exams. So I was taking work in absentia, conducting my research down here on parasites of the gremlin. And then I remember one those summers, I spent a lot of time out in Cuyamaca at the park, and during the week the campsites were not too crowded. I'd study in the daytime, relax in the evening with the family until the kids got to bed, and then I could go to another campsite and like Coleman Lantern study until wee small hours. So I worked hard that one summer, and then went to Corvallis, took on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday all of the written prelims in, six different subjects. 4 hours in the morning, 4 hours in the afternoon for the 3 days. The students up there would take one as a quarter or two a quarter.
But you did it all.
But I did it all. That was Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then Thursday morning went and took my French and German reading exams. I was fatigued, to say the least, but I got through it. Thank
you
goodness.
You really stuck with it.
Yeah.
Why? Were you feeling pressure from the administration here to get your doctorate?
It was, I considered it a must. I had made a commitment. I go back to some of the, in 1941, I sent in an application, but that was, my notation here on is Dr. Johnson wrote and told me to send in the letter of application, so I sent in the following. This is my letter to Dr. Heppner asking
about being
about a physician in 1941. But then that was only after I'd had the 1 year at the University of Idaho.
Uh-huh.
As much as anything, I think, is having this on record. And so in 1946, April 2nd, get this from Dr. Harwood, the president asked that I clinch the deal with you if possible. The procedure is that you fill out the enclosed duplicate form, signing in the designated places and so on, and you will be designated as a teaching assistant with a salary of $2,340 per annum. Yeah.
It was a rather relaxed process then.
6th, I got this from Dr. Heppner. Thank you for your letter of June 3rd. We are happy that you are to become a member of our staff. Look forward to our association next year. So.
How wonderful. It was a rather informal process. You didn't have to make trips here for interviews and go through a whole battery
things. Harwood, he was taking Dr. Myrtle Johnson, Dr. Harwood's word for a lot of it. They wanted me, and so he went along with it. Heppner, in my life, goes back to junior high school graduation there at Roosevelt. He was the superintendent of schools of San Diego.
That's right.
And he one that came up and gave us our diplomas from junior high school. And then he came out here in 35, same year I started here.
Interesting thing about that is that when he started out here as president, I guess some of the faculty members didn't like the idea of him being here.
Right.
They thought, he's superintendent of public schools. How is he going to be a good president?
Yeah. That was a concern, I know.
Yeah. Well, you as a student, did you notice?
It was bad enough. They're putting the college way out here. The Pacific Beach and Morley Field area in Balboa Park were preferred by so many people instead of having a way out here in the country.
Yeah, but just think about the growth of the campus. It wouldn't have been quite as easy.
Sure.
There.
Yeah.
Well, before we get too much further, and this interview is going longer than I thought it was going to. I hope you don't mind it going for this long. And we may have to go to a second interview, or else I'll go next door and get another tape or something. But before we move on too much further with SDSC, tell me about, do you have anything to tell me about your years at Idaho, at the University of Idaho?
Well, of course, they started the year at Berkeley. I was taking the vertebrate natural history courses and so on. In fact, my first experience with a Nobel laureate, Dr. E.L. Lawrence. I took physics from him. He'd just gotten the Nobel Prize, but he was gone half the time. He was off getting all of his accolades and awards because of the Nobel Prize. But this Carl Engler that pointed out in one of the pictures of the Godfather, one of our boys, had gone to preceded me at Berkeley too, and had been E. Raymond Hall, the that I worked for at the museum, had recommended Carl to fill a teaching fellowship at the University of Idaho. And then when the there was a 2-year, another person in 2 years after him, and then from 1940, they wrote down to Berkeley and asked to recommend someone, and Dr. Hall called me into his office and said, if you'd like to go, I'll recommend you, and it should be a cinch. Well, I was on NYA, just skimping, getting along, and this teaching fellowship was great. It was $50 a month, $500 for a year, and that time was great. I went up there, and for $27.50 a month, had room and board.
Wow.
Didn't have to have to sort of wait on tables or a thing. Just when the bells rang, went down and ate, and so the price was, you know, I was able again with the by working in summers again with the city schools and maintenance, was able to make ends meet. And anyhow, the stipulation was up there that I would continue the study on the birds of northern Idaho, and this is what the two preceding ones had done. We each built on the preceding persons and contributed more, and then
did you
that
really?
Was our thesis. And that's what I did.
Did you find that interesting, or was that something that was kind of foisted on you?
Oh, no, I loved it.
You liked it?
Because I taught, assisted in the ornithology course, I taught assisted in the photography, biological photography up there, and taught general zoology labs, and but this got me out in the field, and I was mm-hmm. with the forestry major as a roommate, and when I got in with the foresters, and when they were out in the field doing their forestry surveys, I was doing my birding.
It must have been wonderful.
So it was great. It
sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
That's something I'm interested in. So
it's a real pleasant time. Yes.
That must have been great.
Yeah. So I'd had the experience at Berkeley of preparing mammal and bird skins, and so I was doing the same thing up at Idaho, developing their bird collection for their reference collection at the university.
Hmm. Well, before we go on to military, you want to tell me anything more about your college? We can go back and fill in if you come across anything else you want to say.
Nothing that comes to mind at the moment.
Well, we will. A few things will come to mind later on, possibly. You know,
I marvel at that list of things that you had for me to be thinking about.
It's a lot to think
you
about.
Did well.
As you can see,
you did some good homework, though.
I did a little brainstorming. That's just about it.
Okay. Well, anyhow, it was nice to receive, and have no qualms about trying to cooperate, anyhow.
Good, good. I'm glad you feel that way. Some people hesitate. Some people say, oh, no. She doesn't want to know that stuff, but I want to know.
Well, my problem is digressing. There's just so many things that interrelate, but that's one problem, I guess, with having been around here so long. There's just so many things dovetail.
Yeah. You know, you want to know about your school years, training school, what it was like for you growing up, what it was like for you going to school here, and what it was like mm-hmm. for you teaching here. But there are so many things that relate to that. And we can't really understand all that stuff until we know what your background is mm-hmm. and what your interests are. So all of it is very pertinent. So don't feel that you're digressing.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you about your wife, Lillian.
Okay.
You, I hear through the grapevine that you met in New England when you had a bad back. Or somebody had a bad back.
Well, I had surgery, and I had a pilonidal sinus at the end of the tailbone. I went into the, I was an Air Corps cadet
in the
in a photographic, as an aerial photo cadet, Started out at Seymour Johnson Field in North Carolina, Goldsboro, North Carolina, for basic training. And then on May Day, we, by train, went up to Yale, you know, New Haven, Yale University. And that's where I had 2 or 3 months anyhow of training. And then, of course, every day we had physical fitness, where we jog out across New Haven around, or in the big six-story new Yale gym. And one of those days of the week, we got on the hardwood floors of the basketball court, or one of the gyms anyhow, and we had Supine Charlie, as we called him. Everything was done on the floor, and all the sit-ups and everything. And then apparently that irritated the my tailbone area, where I had the pilonidal sinus. I'd never been aware of it before that. And so that had to be, well, first of all, it caused me trouble. I went out and had it lanced, and put sulfa on it and so on. It still needed to be, needed surgery. So the colonel at the hospital was, considered himself an expert on pilonidal sinus, so he wanted to do it. Anyhow, I went out there, and that meant 10 weeks then of recuperation. And one of the nurses that was out there was Lillian Cranon, and we got acquainted. And of course, she was an officer or a lieutenant, and I was a lowly cadet, and there wasn't supposed to be any fraternizing. But we did manage to go to the Red Cross concert or something at the in the hospital auditorium, and were able to sit together and whatnot. And eventually, when I was more ambulatory, well, we both liked the people in the Red Cross, and they cooperated anyhow, and they put me in the back of the Red Cross ambulance and get us off. Go off the hospital grounds, and there's a little grill, bar and grill, and near the hospital, and we had a lot of booths towards the back, and usually not much activity back there. We'd get in one of the back booths, and we got to know the manager pretty well. And when it was time to leave, he checked if there's somebody from the hospital out in front. He let us out the back door, and we get back on up. And there was one time when she had the nurse on duty out in our recovery area, two-story. I was upstairs. She left the fire door ajar so I could sneak in after hours. Anyhow, we got acquainted, and then when I was that got me away from my class, and they started they phased out the training at Yale University. I finished up at Lowry Field. She took the train out and came to visit me there, mm-hmm. Just before I was commissioned. And so we get a little bit better acquainted. She was able to get off and leave, whereas I couldn't.
Yeah.
And then after I was commissioned, I went down to Tucson, Arizona, and then in July of the, I was commissioned in December, and on July 25th, we were married in Tucson. She came down there, but we hadn't seen each other in the meantime.
Well, I hear some story about when you were in Tucson, some flight arrived with a bunch of packages on it. When they were all unloaded, somebody said.
When she came down to get married, she had a train ticket, and I assumed she was coming in by train, and built my schedule around that. But somebody back there at the air base where she was in Wisconsin said, well, why don't you see if you can get a flight? And she did arrange that. She got down to Texas and then spent a night there at an officer's officer's quarters, and then the next morning she went to Flight Center and asked if, you know, about a flight to Tucson. And they said, well, we don't know of anything going to Tucson. It happened, the pilot was standing there getting in his flight plans. He was going to Phoenix. And he said, well, I'm going to Phoenix. I'll get you there, and that'll at least be a lot closer than Texas. And so she said, fine. So apparently on the way, they had her up in the cockpit area, and they were talking, and she told him why she was going to come, she's coming out to get married and all that sort of thing. And he said, well, I'll drop you off in Tucson. So they called ahead then, and I got the word at the base photo lab to have an enlisted man in a truck meet the cargo plane coming in with 10,000 pounds of equipment. Well, I had stuff on order. I was expecting a shipment. Mm-hmm. And so we went out with the truck and all. Met the plane. They opened up the big cargo door on the side, and out she came. What a surprise. She wasn't supposed to be back until the next day. What a surprise.
That must have been great.
And yeah, that's what happened.
That's the story around it. Uh-huh. Okay. George Sorensen told me a little bit about that.
Uh-huh. Well, he likes that.
That's a good story. Yeah. Well, tell me about what you did then when you were in the Army Air Corps. You were an aerial photographer.
I was I was base photo officer and directed all of the aerial photography. Tucson, when I first arrived there, it was New Year's Eve. New Year's Day morning, I went out and got into the radar facility, and their radar was so top secret at that time, and just getting into it, so I had to go through two security checks and got in, and they said, now your assignment is to develop a camera that will photograph a full sweep of the radar scope, and need this for a training, because they'd been in B-24s where all of their bombing was from visual bombing, and you could see the target, and they could take a picture of the target. But with in the B-29s, where they were above the clouds and doing everything by radar and going over industrial targets and so on, mm-hmm. they had to have a picture of the radar scope.
Right.
And then also, on the B-24s, the cameras were all manually operated. You could put somebody there right with the camera, whereas in the B-29s, the cameras were back in a non-pressurized portion. Mm-hmm. So everything had to be by remote control.
Yeah.
And anyhow, we
And you developed
we did
such
it.
A system.
We did it. Because it was this changeover between B-24s and B-29s. They were still modifying B-24s. One in Tucson, the Consolidated Aircraft had a modification plant over there for the B-24s, and we changed they converted the bomb bay of one into a photo of a camera station with the cameras, oblique cameras and vertical cameras and so on for aerial photography. And when they wanted to try that out to see how it would work, they called me over and Convair and went up. We took off, and I had a sergeant with me, so we each had a handheld camera. We got back in the waist area where the cameras were, and then they said, well, where do you want to go? And one of the engineers, Convair, said, well, I've never been to the Grand Canyon. So we took the B-24, we dropped in the little Colorado, and went the full length of the Grand Canyon, looking up at both rims, and with our cameras going continually.
It was wonderful.
Great. We had five cameras going the length
wow.
of the Grand Canyon. We got a lot of good pictures.
I bet.
Yeah. But anyhow, I was responsible then for all of the cameras in the bombs and the bombers. The bomb crews couldn't get credit for their flights, their missions, if they didn't have the pictures
to back up
for evaluation. Hmm. And then we had the Gestapo cameras, the gun sight aiming point cameras that were in the fighters. That was movie film. We had to process that. We worked 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I was putting in 16-hour days. We'd start out at 3 o'clock in the morning, getting the bombs, getting our camera crews set up with their cameras and before their flights. But I never left the States. I went from Tucson to El Paso, Biggs Field there, where again, well, that's where I finished. I stayed on as base photo officer. When I got to Texas, I was 3 days from going to the Orient.
Oh,
but
really?
Then Hiroshima, Nagasaki. Well, the things started cooling off so that they formed only half of the bomb wings, and I had my